Welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. I do not have time for my normal music preamble and all of that because my interview for this week, which is my deep dive, ran long and you want to hear this. This guy fundamentally is going to change how we view computers forever in the history of humanity. It is beyond fascinating. So please stick with me here. I'm obviously still social distancing from my house and not in the radio station. But with that, we're going to start with some quick news and then dive right in. And this news segment is insane because you may have actually bought your protective personal equipment, your PPE, from ISIS, the terror group. And this is nuts. And this is coming from Ars Technica. And I'm just going to dive right in because, as you know, like in the beginning, when the bomb dropped here in the United States, everybody was scrambling initially to get things like PPE and toilet paper and a whole bunch of stuff. And so by virtue of this, the scammers of the world took advantage. This is one of the reasons why I am the official spokesperson for the COVID-19 Cyber Threat Coalition that was looking at all of this. This was just prolific around the globe. Now, in a series of civil and criminal complaints and forfeiture notices released in the last 2 weeks, the Justice Department has revealed that it has seized hundreds of Bitcoin and Ethereum accounts, millions of dollars, and four websites known basically to be owned by Islamic extremist groups that were using these accounts and funds to support terrorist operations. Prosecutors say that they basically seized forfeited crypto assets from groups which include ISIS, the Al-Qassam Brigades, and Al-Qaeda, representing, and I quote, the government's largest ever seizure of cryptocurrency in the terrorism context. The cryptocurrency alone basically is more than $1 million US, according to Chain Analysis, which is a blockchain firm that is focused on these kinds of things. Now, among the jihadist fundraising efforts, the Department of Justice has nicked one basically is just absolutely insane. Court documents detail how ISIS, or rather one of their ISIS agents, allegedly ran a scam website for COVID-19 personal protective equipment, or PPE, and this website was facemaskcenter.com. According to one civil complaint, a confidential source linked an ISIS facilitator who used the alias Murat Kakar with operation of facemaskcenter.com, as well as four Facebook accounts that advertise the site. Now, Kakar is believed to be responsible for managing multiple ISIS hacking operations, and the complaint alleges that he received $100,000 from Azubia Shanaz, which is an American woman who had planned to travel to Syria to join ISIS, who pled guilty to material support of terrorism in 2018 after laundering ISIS funds with Bitcoin. Now, facemaskcenter.com claimed to offer FDA-approved N95 masks as well as a wide range of other PPE, including Tyvek suits, gloves, goggles, thermometers, and on and on. Their website read, and I quote, Face Mask Center is the original online personal protection equipment supplier and was the first of its kind. So it's not entirely clear to what degree Face Mask Center was an outright scam or whether it merely sold substandard PPE. The civil complaint against facemaskcenter.com states the masks offered on the site, for instance, were produced by a Turkish company and did not meet FDA standards as advertised. When a U.S. customer contacted Face Mask Center asking to buy masks and other PPE for hospitals, nursing homes, and fire departments, the Department of Justice says a Syrian national based in Turkey responded with an offer of up to 100,000 masks, a number the complaint describes as completely unrealistic given the scarcity of masks during the explosion of the pandemic back in March or so, and it's unclear whether any of these masks were actually delivered. Now, Face Mask Center also claimed to be run by sanitary experts and to have been founded in 1996, when in fact the domain itself, facemaskcenter.com, was registered in late February of 2020. That is an obvious red flag for scamming. Aside from that, the PPE site seizure, the Department of Justice said that the IRS, the FBI, and Department of Homeland Security's Homeland Security Investigation Unit also dismantled funding operations for Al-Qaeda and the Aziz al-Din al-Qassam Brigades, which is the militant wing of Hamas. But ISIS appears to have been unique among the groups, at least based on the behavior captured in the indictment, in using a COVID-19 scam to raise money rather than just simply appeals for donations by those obviously sympathetic to their cause. The result is that desperate customers of FaceMaskCenter.com may have not just been stiffed on orders of life-saving PPE, but unknowingly contributed to violent extremists. So if you bought masks on FaceMaskCenter.com or anything else, you just paid for ISIS. And I'm sure you don't want to hear that, but heads up, you're probably not going to get your money back. And that is your news of the day.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for Breaches of the Week. And if you have a data breach to report that's local to you or the major news might have missed it, please, by all means, send it to me, and I'm glad to give you a shout-out and include it in the radio show and possibly a daily video. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can email questions at securityfanatics.com. Again, that's questions at securityfanatics.com. And I'm more than happy to include your data breach and give you a shout-out on the air. With that, let's begin.
And this week's Breaches of the Week, I actually had to pare down significantly because, as you know, my radio show is bi-weekly, and so I have 2 weeks of breaches, and we had almost 60 breaches in the last couple of weeks, and I do not want to spend my entire time with you going over data breaches. So these are the most interesting of the last couple of weeks. And before we begin, I'd like to thank Jason Dance, Sander Sleidnerick, Chris Fallon, David Walker, and Jacqueline Wolf for sending me a lot of these. But again, these are the highlights. And if you have, as I mentioned in my preamble, a breach for me, let me know. With that, let's start with ConocoMinolta. That is the huge copier, and I know they do a whole bunch of other stuff. They got hit with ransomware at the end of July, and that impacted services for almost a week. Now, on July 30th, of this year, customers began reporting that ConocoMinolta's product supply and support website was not accessible. That remained down for almost a week, and customers stated that they could also not get a straight answer as to what was causing the outage. Some ConocoMinolta printers were also displaying a service notification failed error, which then led Konica to update their website outage message to contain a link to a support document. So this was basically a ransomware attack. They've since recovered, but that is a huge issue. Heads up, if you use ConocoMinolta printers in your personal or business life, you might want to contact them. Moving on, let's talk about the Carnival Corporation. These are the people that run the Carnival Cruises. This is the massive cruise line, and they have other smaller cruise lines that they also own as well. They got hit with a ransomware attack that occurred on August 15th, which the company says, and I quote, accessed and encrypted a portion of one brand's information security systems. Now, according to their SEC or Security and Exchange Commission's filings, and I quote again, based on its preliminary assessment on the information currently known, in particular that the incident occurred in a portion of a brand's information technology systems, the company does not believe the incident will have a material impact on its business operations or financial results. Nonetheless, we expect that the security event included unauthorized access to personal data of guests and employees, which may result in potential claims from guests, employees, shareholders, or regulatory agencies. Now, here's the kicker to this entire Carnival thing. In March of 2020, Carnival was apparently notified by internal IT staff that there was an active threat inside their network and servers. When it was reported to Carnival, though, their global operations, their response was apparently basically in the sense, or rather they stated that the reporting party was not actually correct, that there were no signs of an information security threat by virtue of their guidelines of risk management. And so we'll see how deep this goes. But if you have been on a Carnival cruise or work for them, you might want to check in, because I'm having a feeling that your data might have been hit. Moving on, let's talk about FreePick. This is a photo and graphic design site. Now, according to the company's official statement, the security breach that they had occurred after an attacker used an SQL or SQL injection vulnerability to gain access to one of its databases storing user data. If you didn't know, SQL or SQL is a very popular database. And so when you're signing up for a website and all of that, you might be stored in a SQL database. If they were able to get through via an injection vulnerability in SQL or SQL, that means this company was not updating this. Now, FreePick says that the attacker gained usernames and passwords for the oldest 8.3 million users that had registered on its website, both FreePick and FlatIcon. And FreePick didn't say when the breach took place or when they found out about it, but heads up to you if you use FreePick or FlatIcon. Moving on, let's head on up to Canada and talk about the GC Key Service, which is part of the Canadian government. Now, the Treasury Board of Canada Secretariat confirmed that thousands of user accounts for online Canadian government services was recently hacked. Now, the attackers targeted the GC Key Service with what's called a credential surfing attack. This is and basically this service is used by 30 federal departments in Canada, as well as the Canada Revenue Agency, which is their equivalent of the IRS. GC Key allows Canadian citizens to access services like employment and social development, my service accounts, immigration, refugee status, all this kind of stuff. Now, the threat actors fraudulently acquired logins for 9,041 GC Key accounts and then tried to use them to access other government services. So heads up, if you're a Canadian citizen listening to me, your GC Key account may have been compromised. Moving on, let's talk about Instacart again. If you recall, a month ago, they had a data breach where we were able, and I mean we, by meaning me personally, BuzzFeed broke the news, but BuzzFeed was able to confirm that this was a legitimate hit because of the work that I did. I was quoted in that article regarding that they had a data breach of some type a month ago or so. But now, Instacart has disclosed a security incident caused by two employees working for a company that provides Instacart with tech support services for their shoppers. Now, according to a press release by Instacart, they say that two employees, and I quote, may have reviewed more shopper profiles than was necessary in their roles as support agents. The company is now notifying 2,180 shoppers via email about this incident, and this figure represents the Instacart user profiles the company believes these two employees might have needlessly accessed while working as tech support. Instacart said it learned of this breach in a procedure of the regarding a routine security audit. They were going through a routine security audit, which leads me to believe that by virtue of what BuzzFeed discover, that I personally, as I'm talking to you here, confirm for BuzzFeed, they may have gone through an internal audit just to see if they were vulnerable anywhere else or if they had a vulnerability, and this is what they uncovered. So heads up to you if you actually are a shopper for Instacart. Moving on, let's talk about the very swank Ritz Hotel in London, or it's also known as the Ritz London. They're launching an investigation into a potential data breach that affected its food and beverage reservation system. The information stolen in this breach seems to have been used by fraudsters to worm their way into the wallets of hotel clients. Obviously, if you're staying at the Ritz London, you probably have some cash, and that's what they were banking on. Now, in a series of tweets shared over about the 2 weekends ago or so, the luxury hotel confirmed that it was made aware of potential breaches on August 12th of this year, adding that the compromised data did not include any credit card or payment details, meaning if you used your credit card online with the Ritz in London, you're probably okay. The hotel went on to notify all of its affected customers as well as authorities about the breach as it investigates. So heads up if you've been to the Ritz London or stayed there. Moving on, let's talk about YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok users. And these are all in the same bucket. And I say that because a database of some 235 million YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok profiles is basically was exposed without any kind of password. Now, this was coming from a company called Deep Social, and they are now defunct. Deep Social shut themselves down. But a Wednesday, August 19th report on the news site Information Security stated in part, and I quote, Bob Diachenko, the researcher that found this, first contacted Deep Social using the email address listed on its website to disclose the exposure. The administrators of Deep Social forwarded the disclosure to Social Data. The CTO of Social Data acknowledged the exposure and the servers hosting the data were taken down about 3 hours later, end quote. Now, Social Data bought Deep Social, apparently, but Deep Social provided, among other things, social media data. The company reportedly is no longer operating. As I just mentioned, it looks like they were assumed by Social Data, and Social Data is in a similar business. The information that was exposed there was profile name, full real name, profile photo, amount description, whether the profile belongs to a business or has advertisements, statistics about follower engagement, including things like the number of followers, engagement rate, follower growth rate, audience gender, audience age, audience location, the amount of likes it had, timestamps on its last post, the age and gender of the account owner, and on and on. So if you have an account with YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, and odds are if you are talking to me here, you probably, or talking to me, listening to me here, you probably have one of these, myself included. We may have all been compromised. Moving on. Let's do a Blackbaud update real quick. Now, if you recall, Blackbaud is that software that a lot of learning and educational institutions as well as charities use. Massive data breach, which basically means any educational institution or charity that was using them essentially had to go ahead and disclose a data breach. They had a petition for a class action lawsuit against themselves, and this has been filed in the United States District Court for Southern Carolina in Charleston, essentially after this breach. And so that is obviously a huge, huge problem. Now, the past couple of weeks, we've seen multiple disclosures by multiple organizations, including the Latin School in Chicago, Evangel University in Missouri, Rochester YMCA in New York. I mean, and on and on and on. I'm not going to go through the whole list because it's insane and I don't want to be here for an hour. But heads up, if your organization, whether it's your school or college or university or charity, uses Blackbaud, you are in this boat with everybody else, no exceptions. Moving on, let's talk about Denmark's Data Protection Authority. This is called Datatilsynet, and I'm probably pronouncing that horribly, but here we are, because this is the governing body for data protection in Denmark, and they themselves disclosed a breach of personal data at their own facility in early August. Known as the DPA, they said physical documents containing confidential and sensitive citizen information were not shredded instead of disposed of as ordinary waste paper. Basically, they sent a whole bunch of internal documents to go ahead and get shredded, and they weren't. And so by virtue of that, they now have to declare a data breach on themselves when they're the ones that are supposed to be collecting the data breaches here. Now, their advisor, Mia Klintrup, said that the employee error, and I quote, is deeply regrettable, adding that it is not believed that personal information reached unauthorized individuals. But nevertheless, they are reviewing their procedures and hopefully tightening guidelines and on. So hopefully Denmark's Data Protection Authority, or DPA, will get their stuff together. Moving on, let's head down to the Kiwis and talk about New Zealand, because their stock exchange, the NZX, actually had a cyber attack that knocked out their stock exchange for 2 days. That's insane. That is New Zealand's Wall Street. That is very fascinating. Now, the exchange said the attack had, and I quote, impacted NZX network connectivity, end quote, and it had decided to halt trading on cash markets before 4 p.m. local time. This is about a week, week and a half ago or so. Trading halted then again for a second time on Wednesday, so that's about 2 weeks ago or so, and was back up before the end of the day. These are looking like denial of service attacks, but somebody was actually able to knock out New Zealand's stock exchange. That's crazy. So heads up if you invest on the NZX wherever you are in the world. Moving on, let's talk about Amazon. Yes, I'm talking about that massive Amazon. Federal officials in the United States have reportedly charged two brothers in New York State for allegedly scamming Amazon out of $19 million US. Now, the allegations outlined in a separate announcement by the district attorney's office claim that the brothers had manipulated Amazon's vendor system to have Amazon pay for goods that Amazon never purchased. So that basically, this is a new twist on invoice fraud, but they were able to scam Amazon out of $19 million before they were caught. I think that shows you just how insanely huge Amazon is, but here we are. Moving on, let's talk about New South Wales drivers in Australia. We're heading down under. So if you have a driver's license in New South Wales, and I do have listeners in Australia, heads up to you, because tens of thousands of scanned New South Wales driver's licenses and completed tolling notice statutory declarations were left exposed in an open Amazon Web Services, or AWS, S3 bucket, which is basically a storage database. One folder contained 108,535 images of the front and back of scanned driver's licenses from New South Wales, and another one contained scans of roads and maritime services tolling notice statutory declarations in both PDF and JPEG format. Now, a spokesperson for Transport for NSW New South Wales said the agency is working with basically the cybersecurity outfit from the New South Wales government to investigate what it called, and I quote, the alleged data issue relating to an Amazon S3 bucket containing personal information, including driver's license. They are also suggesting that a third party is responsible for this leak, meaning they outsourced something to a contractor that had this information and the contractor played fast and loose. We will see, but heads up, New South Wales drivers in Australia. Moving on, let's talk about 350 million email addresses, because a research team uncovered an unsecured data bucket owned by an unidentified party containing 7 gigabytes worth of unencrypted files that include 350 million strings of unique email addresses. Now, the massive trove of emails was left on a publicly accessible Amazon AWS server, according to basically the research, and anybody could download this and access this. You could, I could, didn't need a password. You could go get 350 million email addresses, which is absolutely insane. And finally, we are going to talk about three major things that are happening here in the world. And the first one is going to be Uber. This is the rideshare app that many people know and love. I actually boycott them. I'll get into that. But here's an update on their 2016 data breach that they handled absolutely horribly. That is the reason why I'm basically boycotting them. But again, we'll get into this. Now, federal prosecutors in the United States have charged Uber's former chief security officer with covering up the 2016 data breach by arranging a $100,000 US payoff to the attacker responsible for the attack. Now, if you recall, the personal data of 57 million Uber passengers worldwide and drivers were stolen in this attack. Prosecutors are charging Joe Sullivan, he's a chief security officer or former chief security officer, with obstructing justice and concealing a felony for the alleged cover-up. Sullivan, and I quote, engaged in a scheme to withhold and conceal the breach from regulators and failed to report it to law enforcement or the public, according to a complaint that was filed in a federal court in California 2 weeks ago on Thursday from when you're listening to this. And I quote again, Sullivan is being charged with a corporate cover-up, and Sullivan is being charged with the payment of hush money to conceal something that should have been revealed. This is according to David Anderson, who is the U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of California, speaking to NPR or National Public Radio, which odds are you're probably listening to me on an NPR affiliate. This speaks to why we need transparency in data breach laws here in the United States, and Uber basically, their corporate culture was awful and they handled it horribly. And that is why I have not taken an Uber since I learned about that. Moving on, let's talk about a French military officer who is a senior official in the French military because he basically is stationed abroad and is under investigation for serious security breaches, according to France's defense minister about a week ago Sunday. Now, Europe One Radio reported that this officer served on a NATO base in Italy and is accused of treason for passing quote-unquote ultra-sensitive information to Russian secret services. Now, the French defense ministry would not provide details about the officer. Speaking on Europe One on Sunday, defense minister Florence Parly said only a judicial procedure is underway and the French military has taken, and I quote, necessary protective measures after the breaches. The Paris prosecutor's office, which is handling the case, would not comment, and NATO did not immediately respond to requests from information for reporters. So that is obviously a very huge thing. If Russian intelligence services were paying off a high-ranking French military officer, they may have gotten both French and NATO intelligence, and that is obviously a very huge and disturbing data breach. Moving on, and this is the very last thing we're going to be talking about here, because we're going to be talking about a new P2P known as peer-to-peer botnet, and I will explain that, targeting millions of servers around the world, which may affect your ability to use your apps and a whole bunch of other stuff. Now, researchers have found what they believe is a previously undiscovered botnet that uses unusually advanced measures, and I'll get to that, to covertly, target millions of servers around the world. Now, the botnet uses proprietary software written from scratch to infect servers and corral them into a peer-to-peer network. And this is according to researchers from the security firm Guardicore that reported this about a week ago Wednesday. Now, peer-to-peer botnets distribute their administration among many infected nodes or computers rather than relying on a control server to send commands and basically receive exfiltrated data. With no centralized server, botnets are genuinely harder to spot and they are more difficult to shut down. Now, according to Guardicore Labs, and I quote, "What was intriguing about this campaign was that at first sight, there was no apparent command and control or CNC server to be connected to. It was shortly after the beginning of the research when we understood no CNC existed in the first place."
And stay tuned to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show as we take a quick break for a public service announcement. We'll be back right after that.